You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
You know, I think we can learn a lot today. That's one of the things I really appreciate about this show is having that chance to do that. You bring on different guests, you bring up different topics, and you tend to learn, hopefully a little bit, hopefully a lot, too. I think we're doing that today as we look at more and more of the pandemic effects, especially of elder abuse. The doors are open for neglect and financial exploitation. And we do have a shared responsibility, don't we? I think those are good questions to ask. And we'll do that today as we talk about preventing elder abuse. It's AARP's Fraud Watch Friday on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio, from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thank you, Eric. What is it that I overdramatically say on Friday? Kind of like a woo! Sometimes it's a Friday, yes, great! Only two more working days this week. I know we all get that, unfortunately, but it's the, hey, we've hung in there, right? And now we have this Montana weekend to hang out in. Everything is working out fine, okay? And thank you for being here, 2 decades strong, working on 3. It is from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana. I'm not kidding. Every time we pick up a paper or try to look at kind of getting into a topic, you can learn a lot and your perspectives can change, too. Hopefully, I guess that's what learning is supposed to do, right? Well, as we talk today and learn more today, we have some familiar friends on the radio. Alex Ward is with us as we launch into this. And hey, Al, how you doing, buddy? You doing okay?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hanging in there.
The smoke getting better in Billings?
Oh, you know, we were out all over the state of Montana. And I'm not going to answer that question because I will just launch into something about how we can prevent this. But yeah, how about I just say, yeah, it's a little bit better. How about you?
Yeah, it was a little clearer here in Missoula, which is where I am right now.
Ah, that's great. Well, I often I don't do this enough because you are so qualified AARP state president for Montana. You hold a master's degree in adult education from Seattle University, bachelor's in political science from the University of Washington. You've been an adult education specialist for a long time. I just wanted to, because I don't have you in studio here today, Al.
No.
I'm missing you a little bit. All right.
Well, yesterday was my 10th anniversary, so I thought I'd spend it here with my wife and my sister.
Congratulations. That education paid off, it looks like. Thank you again. Dr. Jackie Gray is with us. She's a research associate professor at the Department of Population Health and the associate director for the Center for Rural Health for Indigenous Programs at UND, University of North Dakota. Also director there at the, and I'll mention this maybe a time or two, a National Indigenous Elder Justice Initiative. As we focus a little bit today, too, on the pandemic's effect on elder abuse, not only, but in Indian country as well. I think sometimes we presume that this blanket approach works. And in fact, Dr. Gray, welcome. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. I'm doing just fine.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. And I hope you're well. That blanket approach to healthcare, to elder abuse, to kind of fixing our problems, you found out in some of the things that you've studied, doesn't really work. You like the more targeted approach, right?
Well, there are just so many different issues. When you're talking about elder abuse in Indian country, you've got to look at the different jurisdictions. We have federal jurisdiction, state jurisdiction, and tribal jurisdiction. And the majority of tribes do not have an elder abuse code in their laws.
Yeah, I was surprised at that number, as we'll get to that here in a minute. I think it was only 50-some of 460 tribes that actually this was before 2011. And so that surprised me. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, when we last surveyed it in 2019, there were only 100 of the 574 tribes that have an elder abuse code.
Yeah. Well, and go ahead, Al.
In Montana, only 8 out of 5 out of 8 of the reservations have elder abuse codes.
And I want to talk about how important a step that is. But that was since 2011. So, you know, policy is involved in all of this. I want to go and define this problem a little bit more, too, from a different perspective, because elder abuse and this Fraud Watch Network tip sheet right off the top here strikes on something that I think plays at the heart of it here, too. The problem of elder abuse needs the attention of all Montanans because we share in the responsibility to help protect the elderly. And then it goes on to cite some, this is 7,000 calls for services to the Adult Protective Services hotline. There are scaring statistics regarding this. And I think, Jackie, let's just start off with this responsibility we all share. There are, I think, and maybe comment on this how, in any way you want to go with it, but, you know, there are we share or we get benefits from sharing in this responsibility. I'm not sure everybody accepts the responsibility at the same level, and I think that might be okay as well, but it's good for society, and it's good for the individual. It's good for the soul.
Well, it's really important that everyone attend to it, and if they see something, they need to take some action or say something. But there are a lot of things that can be done as far as preventing elder abuse, whether it's, you know, checking in when someone's not showing up when they usually do, whether it's making contact. That isolation really makes people more vulnerable to abuse and neglect and exploitation. And when we look at the states like Montana and North Dakota, you've got a lot of landmass, not a lot of people. There's more of that isolation, and so that makes you more at risk. I know in talking with some of the elder services providers during the pandemic, I know of one that said that what they did was they gave every elder a red sheet of paper and a green sheet of paper so that they could put it up in their window. Green if they were doing okay, and red if they needed some assistance. Mm. And even someone driving by on the road could see those sheets of paper in the window and recognize, oh, someone needs to check in on this person or not.
Well, and one of the things that the pandemic did is it increased the isolation.
Absolutely.
And one of the big problems, I think, with anything, whether it's domestic violence or elder abuse or child abuse or any of those things, is the person who is involved in committing the abuse is going to try and isolate that person from their friends and other people. So friends are really the key to keeping those people safe, because if they start getting isolated, then the friends should be stepping in and saying, hey, how are you doing? Can we take care? Can we do something for you?
And Jackie, that's one of the reasons I hear an awful lot of medical professionals say we try. It's best to keep our elders in their homes or to help them remain independent for as long as possible. Because during this time as well, dependency, I guess independency is a healthier way to live, right? Doesn't the research show that?
Well, being in their own homes is really important, especially in maintaining that mental health, which helps to, as far as they're being able to not just function mentally, but it helps the physical health as well when they're mentally healthy. And, you know, breaking down the isolation, staying in your own home where you know where things are, you're close to friends, family, community, you can participate in those things. One of the things we know about Indian Country is there are less than 20 nursing homes that are Native in all of the United States. So chances are if someone has to move out of their home and to a nursing home or assisted care facility, it's going to be a long way from their family, their friends, their community, and their mental health goes down because of that isolation from those that they want to see.
Dr. Jackie Gray, she's the professor at University of North Dakota School of Medicine and Health Sciences and Associate Director for the Center for Rural Health for Indigenous Programs. Also, Al Ward here, Montana's AARP State President, volunteered in almost every circle that's out there, including in our native communities. And Al, I kind of want to have, got enough time to do this, to maybe talk about some of these ways of elder abuse. And then I wanted you to relate a story, because you are talking to people. You look at these numbers, and it's 1 in 10 Americans age 60 plus have experienced some form of elder abuse. You go, 1 in 10. But this is to our elders, the vulnerable, and the issue always is that sometimes it hurts at a deep level when they fall victim to abuse.
Yeah, one of the things that, part of elder abuse is financial exploitation. And like I said, I came here to visit with my sister. My sister was telling me about a person that she knows where somebody cleaned out their lifetime savings. And that's what happens with financial exploitation, is people take people's nest egg, and then it changes their quality of life for the rest of their life.
And that's why it becomes our responsibility. I think our shared responsibility. I wonder, Dr. Gray, how many people accept that on its face, that this is a shared responsibility to help protect and take care of our elders? Is that a nuance to prevention?
It is a nuance to prevention, and it really sometimes depends upon the culture within the community. Within Native Americans, the culture has been for years that they honor, respect, and take care of their elderly. But that's kind of broken down over the last generation. And so we're seeing more conflict around that, or dissonance around that, where you see more exploitation of those elders rather than taking care of them. And I'm not saying it's across the board, but we need to pay more attention to it. Sometimes it's not considering what they're doing as abuse.
I think that's important. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, especially with family and financial exploitation. Sometimes it's, I've heard students that when we went back and were visiting the reservation for something, I need to get over to grandma's because she just got a check and I need to get my part before everybody else takes it all.
Yes. And Al, this whole not abuse thing, I guess it goes, well, one thing we got to talk about, I'm going to define some things here, have just enough time. What is elder abuse? It's emotional abuse, like verbal assaults, threats of abuse. It's physical abuse. It's confinement, restraining, or isolating, other than for medical purposes. It's passive neglect, a caregiver's failure to provide for an adult with life necessities. And as Al was saying, financial exploitation and willful deprivation. Look those things up. Those are important elements to how we can prevent this. And we'll talk more about that as we continue on here. It's Fraud Watch Friday, August 6th already, 2021. Oh, my gosh. Goodness. Back with more in a bit. I do have to give some of these numbers out. I think it's important you hear them. Try to get perspective on it, because the abuse can be pretty devastating, especially that financial exploitation, but physical neglect. Approximately 1 in 10 Americans, as I said earlier, 60 plus, have experienced some form of elder abuse. Some estimates range as high as 5 million elders are abused each year. And one study estimated that only 1 in 14 cases of abuse are reported to authorities. It is AARP's Fraud Watch Friday, and stopping elder abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation, a big key here, with a focus on Indian country. Dr. Jackie Gray is with us, and she is the director of the National Indigenous Elder Justice Institute and from the University of North Dakota, and our state president for AARP. It's Al Ward. Again, appreciate you guys being here as we kind of get more into this topic here. I want to go back just a little bit, Dr. Gray, and talk about how people feel it's maybe not abuse. There's always an education component to moving health initiatives forward. I listed what they defined as elder abuse, and I went through them pretty fast, but I wanted to show that kind of proof of what you were saying, that there may be a lot of people that don't understand the full extent or the severity of the abuse. Is that a problem that academia is taking on?
We're trying. As I mentioned, as far as data, there really isn't a lot of data. These are all just estimates as far as how much abuse is out there. Mm-hmm. But when we look at what's really there, since 1989, there have only been about 5 research studies of elder abuse in Indian country. And those were limited to 1 or 2 tribes and just 1 or 2 types of abuse. So there really isn't a lot of information. One of the things that NIGI, the National Indigenous Elder Justice Initiative, has been doing is trying to get more data. We have a survey that's available for tribes to use to interview their elders and gather some information, and then we'll help them with the analysis of the data and everything. And through that, we hope to have some aggregate data across the United States of several hundred or thousand participants that can give us a better idea of what the numbers really are as far as what's happening as far as abuse and neglect.
Alan, this pandemic has increased the vulnerability for elders as well in a lot of ways. How is AARP trying to get the word out and educate on that?
Well, you know, we have been, elder abuse hasn't been a part of our Fraud Watch network for a long time. So it's relatively new, probably the last 5-6 years. And AARP consistently tries to get information out to people through our magazine and through the newsletter that we send out every month. But we're also doing a lot of programs. Of course, COVID really cut into that because we're not doing anything in person right now. But we're doing a lot of virtual training. And, you know, I'm a part of the Eastern Montana Elder Justice Council, which is really, we have a prevention subcommittee that is trying to figure out all the ways that we can get information out to people, because that's a big deal. You know, when Dr. Gray talks about Indian country and isolation and the fact that people, if they go to a nursing home, they're going to have to move away from where they live. That's exactly what happens in Eastern Montana. You know, an awful lot of people end up moving to Billings because it's got, you know, places to help support them, which is unfortunate because that really changes their quality of life.
I think we have to talk. Well, I got to take a break. I want to come on back and introduce the topic of it's underneath all of this too. Not that we saved it for any reason, but mental health, about how mental health fits into the overall picture of wellness from a health standpoint. But also, you know, from a societal standpoint. And Dr. Jacqueline Gray, she is actually with an associate professor for the Department of Population Health, and then also associate director for the Center for Rural Health and Indigenous Programs. And then there's one more. It's over here. There it is. The National Indigenous Elder Justice Initiative. I want to give that out because it's NIEJI.org. National Indigenous Elder Justice Initiative. I think there's some going there. Began in 2011. We'll talk more about that. And then, as I mentioned, how mental health will affect this overall picture. Brian Bennett, though, first has these headlines. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. I'm Tom Schultz. I should give that phone out a little more often than I do, I'm told. 866, with a smack on the head, by the way, by my grandma. 866-627-5483. 866-627-5483. Or you can join us, too, via text message. That's 781-627-5483. So I set this up. I don't want to spend any more time setting up the question about mental health. So Dr. Jackie Gray, Al Ward is with us, Alex Ward, AARP's president for the state of Montana, and Dr. Gray from the University of North Dakota School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Mental health, the numbers, what do the numbers show about how that plays a part in, as you had talked about, these various ways that we elders are, you know, abused by people who maybe are not quite aware of the abuse that they're giving?
Well, the isolation that we talked about before figures in with the mental health, but also, you know, things like keeping mentally active. Are they having conversations with people? Are they reading various books from various genres? Are they doing crossword puzzles or Sudoku or other things that playing games, things that, you know, challenge their thinking? That helps to keep them mentally alert and able to focus. What are they interacting with various people? All of those things are helpful for their mental health. And that mental health being good helps to keep away some of those other physical things that might interfere. Actually, being physically active helps your mental health. So, you know, we're not the separate pieces. We're very holistic in how all of those systems work together for our best health.
That's right. That's where I was interested in kind of querying about, because I just saw this note here about statistics from Adult Protective Services in 2017, 7,000 calls for Adult Protective Services. And then they listed the types of abuse that were here. But I wonder how many of those 7,000 calls are related to mental health or people in the mental health system. Or I guess that leads to the question that I didn't give you enough time to answer. How best do we share in the responsibility to protect our elderlies, our elders?
You know, maintaining contact. You know, the more we can interact, or if you can't visit, are you calling? Are you video conferencing with that elder? That, I think, is something that they found really helpful during the pandemic when they couldn't visit the elders. Were the video conferencing so they could see the faces and interact with people. All of those things really help to keep their anxiety down, the depression down, because all of that goes along with that isolation, that those feelings that develop whenever they can't interact with other people. Those all, once they start emerging, then it impacts the physical health systems, which makes that more apt to break down and make them more vulnerable.
Al, what has worked for AARP in terms of programs that help achieve what Dr. Gray had just spoke about, you know, preventing isolation? What programs are working out there? What works best?
We've had a program called Staying Sharp for quite a while. It actually came out of the National Teachers program that AARP, you know, is part of, the National Retired Teachers Association, which actually started before AARP did. But it has been a really good program. We put out a lot of stuff around the kind of things that Dr. Gray has talked about.
You know, great.
As far as the things to keep people's mind active.
And we'll explore that more exactly as we come on back here. I think that's the next step as we talk about preventing elder abuse on AARP's Fraud Watch Friday.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
Ooh, closing in on the weekend. Thank you, Mr. Guy, who gives out my phone number because I forget that sometimes. It is, if you want to join us, 866-627-5483. As today, it's Fraud Watch Friday, elder abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation, and also elder abuse in Indian Country. That's how, that's all of Montana. You know, elder abuse in Montana, if you want to say that. We are with Dr. Jackie Gray. She is with the University of North Dakota, also the director of the National Indigenous Elder Justice Institute. And it is a bunch of letters here to look it up online. So just try to remember National Indigenous Elder Justice Initiative. Al Ward, too, with AARP. Okay. Thank you again, Jackie Gray, Dr. Gray, for being here. I'm trying to draw a line between, you know, how mental health might help prevent in elder abuse. If there's a lot of the abuse is happening from children or other family members or spouses, there seems to be that component in a lot of things. We're starting to realize how, as I said earlier, fits into the overall picture of wellness. But I think there's some inexact science regarding mental health. I just want to get your comment on that, too, as we sort of move on. We look at prevention methods and how much focus should we put on mental health?
Well, I think mental health is a big component of anything we do. You know, when there is abuse going on, you're going to find increased anxiety, you know, fear if there's a physical abuse going on. And another component is with Alzheimer's and dementia, the person not recognizing who they're with, where they are, things like that creates a lot of fear. And so the anxiety goes up. Along with that anxiety, then you find depression, especially with the isolation. Feeling bad, things like that all compound that depression. So the mental health is really tied to just about everything that happens.
Al, is mental health tied into many of the service organizations through AARP?
You know, mental health is one of those things that we're always talking about. The unfortunate thing is that we haven't built a mental health system that that really supports our medical health system as well as we should have. And I think people are working on that right now. But the bottom line is, as Dr. Gray says, mental health is just as important as medical health for people. And sometimes it's more important. One thing I want to bring up before we get done here is NIDGE has a great website.
Yeah.
And I went on it quite a bit in the last little while. A couple of the things that they do in Indian Country that they really don't do other places is they have tribal elder protection teams. And that's one of the things that's on their website is how to put together a tribal elder protection team. They obviously have elder protection codes, which in, you know, out of Indian Country, we basically have a lot of laws that focus on elder abuse. Also a lot of laws that focus on fraud. The other thing that's on the website that I think is really important is interview questions. Because when you're talking to people, sometimes, you know, the questions that you ask are actually going to either get you information or not get you information. And sometimes people are reluctant to give information about family members. And so I really was thought that was interesting. The other thing that they have on the website is tribal hotlines. And there are tribal hotlines for most of the tribes in Montana. So those are, well, actually all the tribes in Montana. So that website is really important.
Yeah, Dr. Gray, you do have a lot of programs within the centers and within NEJA as well that are targeted. It kind of goes back to that question about one size doesn't fit all. And so you talk about putting those programs together as the one like Al mentioned, for instance, the Tribal Elder Protection Team. What niche does it fill? Why does it work? And then we should talk about policy at some point before the hour's over.
Yeah. Well, and the elder protection teams are set up where you're drawing from all of the resources that the tribe has. That varies from tribe to tribe. And so, you know, working with them and telling them one size doesn't fit all, you have to find what fits for your tribe. And then with that, when there's an issue brought to their attention, they can address, is there a housing issue part of it? Is there a medical issue part of it? Do they need the police? You know, what's going to address what the issues are so we can reduce the chance of there being abuse or follow up with this at-risk elder and their family as to making the situation better?
Then let's take this into that policy direction because it's always a component of it. So you develop programs that communities have tried to put together themselves. And I think when you talk about resources like yourself having technical assistance, I think that's just kick-starting local caring and local programs. And you decide what issues you are going to address through that, hopefully at that local level. What kind of policy helps that work best and doesn't get in its way?
Well, first of all, we don't decide what they need. They decide
right.
What we need, and then we help them build it. But policies around an elder abuse code, a resolution saying who's going to enforce all of these things, how they're going to work, that's the baseline in getting some things started. I know some places have been able to start with an elder protection team and have that function and to really draw attention to it and increase the awareness that there needs to be an elder protection code. There also needs to be funding because tribes don't have the funding to put these things in place. You know, you talk about elder protection services or adult protection services. Most tribes don't have them and they don't have the resources to develop them. So how do we get that started? How can we get some funds in there to get some of these things established? Those things are all important and policy issues.
So codes, municipal codes, local codes to help, and then funding. Al, what's your thought on that question about what is working best out there and what policy encourages that kind of program?
Well, you know, the unfortunate thing is that in any community, things that are going to get worked on are the things that people think are important. And if people don't think elder abuse is an important problem because it's dramatically underreported in the nation, then people aren't going to put anything towards it. As a matter of fact, one of the things that in working with several of the tribes in Montana, one of the things that I found is that the director of adult protective services in Montana will work with the tribes in developing an elder protection program. And I only know of one tribe that actually has their own adult protective services. So it's, you know, it's something.
But the door's open for that to happen, right?
If that becomes an issue that people are going to solve, then it gets solved. The unfortunate thing is, like I said, since it's underreported, people don't see it as an issue.
Well, and Tom, another issue is that within Indian country, people don't want to involve law enforcement and the judicial system. There's really a lack of trust there. So finding what we call restorative justice approaches, those things that are going to help to resolve the relationship in a positive way without going through a punitive system.
Right. Right. That's a great point. How difficult is it? You know,
do you want to report your family members?
No.
Do you want to send your grandchild to jail? You know, those are things that really prevent Native elders from reporting.
Oh, I see. I was actually, okay, I got to take a short break. I was kind of, let me come back before I go. Thank you. Thank you. I got to collect some thoughts here about, again, policy and how we get. You've testified before Congress, Dr. Gray, so I want to come on back and talk about your perception on how our policymakers are addressing the issue of elder abuse and neglect in our country. Just got to give this flat information out there. We're talking about maybe some broader issues underneath this, but what we see on the ground when it comes to elder abuse is destructive. Welcome back. It's Voices of Montana. I'm Tom Schultz. Elders who have been abused have a 300% higher risk of death when compared to those who have not been mistreated. That's a remarkable figure. And there are more remarkable figures here. Hopefully you're associating yourself with. Sometimes they go in one ear and out the other. But every time I look at these figures, I try to picture and I see a huge, huge impact on our seniors. And it bothers, I'm just talking personally. It bothers me because I think we can do better. So I'm going to mention this too, as we maybe had time for one more question with our guests here today. But just to get the words out there, how can elder abuse be prevented? Plan for your own future with the power of attorney, a will and a living will. You can address a lot of these decisions ahead of time. I'm going to abbreviate some of this. Know your rights. If you use the services of a paid family caregiver, you have the right to voice your preferences and concerns. Staying active was mentioned here too in the community. Posting and opening your own mail is something you might not think about, but that's important as well to guaranteeing your independence. And of course, things that we talk about a lot, not giving personal information out over the phone. Dr. Jackie Gray is with us, director of the National Indigenous Elder Justice Institute, NIJA, as it is, NIEJI.org, also with the University of North Dakota School of Medicine and Health Sciences, and associate director for the Center for Rural Health for Indigenous Programs. It's a lot of hats. Al Ward is with us too, AARP State President. Happy anniversary to you, Al. Agencies, I think, Dr. Gray, I'm hearing, especially through the pandemic, are learning to see eye to eye on a lot of things. Different organizations, maybe they have different interests, but, you know, communication has improved because of the pandemic. Hopefully it has. And so when you talk about trying to meld an overall approach and agencies that are not learning to see eye to eye or haven't seen eye to eye, do you see them learning to do that? Does that move us forward in the future for regards to policy?
Well, we're really encouraging more collaboration and cross-deputization and things like that between the various state, federal, and tribal police, things like that. Same way with elder protection services, that there be that collaborative interaction between the state and the tribal. It takes time to develop those relationships and the trust that's necessary there.
Al, we talk about the pandemic having those disproportionate negative effects on our elders. Isolation, a huge one there, but financial exploitation. Your comment about how agencies possibly, you have seen maybe a positive out of this, are working closer together.
Well, you know, things are, you know, changing. I mean, in the last probably 15 years, the Legal Services Developer Program has come into being in the state of Montana. And right now, what's happening with them is that they're going out and doing clinics around the state where elders can get wills and other end-of-life documents actually put together by attorneys and paralegals for free. They don't have to, you know, go out and get an attorney to do that. So, you know, those kind of services start getting developed when people start recognizing that there's a problem. One of the questions that I have of Dr. Gray is...
We're out of time. I'm sorry, Al. Dr. Gray, I just want to give you an open opportunity here, 30 seconds or so, for some final thoughts.
Well, I would just encourage people to go to our website, to NIEJI.org, And there are lots of resources there. They can also contact us at info@niji.org and ask about resources and things we can connect them with.
Thank you for the work you do. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep, Dr. Jackie Gray. And then also Al Ward, thanks for what you do. Appreciate you.
It's good to talk to you again, Tom.
And I appreciate the chance to learn and to grow and to provide, you know, fight these things. Elder abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation ought not to be. Thanks again for everybody, to everybody for joining us, and we'll see you Monday.